Welcome to another broadcast of Studying the Scriptures. I'm your host, Dr. Todd Baker, director of Berit Hadashah Ministries in Dallas, Texas. Well, we continue our series of studies on the person of the Messiah. Our series is formally called The Marvelous Messiah. What do the Scriptures say about the central person of divine revelation, the Messiah? And we have now been studying the prophecies that deal with the ancestry of the Messiah, his human ancestry. And we've looked at two sources from whence we have the genealogies listing the human ancestry of Messiah. And those two genealogies are given in the Gospel of Matthew and the Gospel of Luke. And we were studying their significance and how they prove that Jesus is the Messiah, because the prophetic scriptures given in the Tanakh, or what we call, what the Christian church calls the Old Testament, tells us the Messiah would be descendant from certain individuals, from Abraham, the founding father of the Jewish people. The Messiah would be a descendant of Abraham. He would be a descendant of Judah and the tribe of Judah. He would be a descendant of King David. And so these genealogies given for us in the Gospels of Matthew and Luke certainly bear this out. And this brings us then to the question of why the need for two genealogies, especially in light of the fact that Yeshua was not the physical son and descendant of Joseph of Nazareth. Now, the more popular explanation for the need of two genealogies is that Matthew's gospel gives the royal line, hence Jesus' legal right to the Davidic throne as King Messiah. And Luke's gospel gives the physical line. So Matthew's gospel, Matthew's genealogy of Messiah, provides the legal line whereby Yeshua can lay claim to the Davidic throne. And Luke's gospel gives his line by physical descent. And this is done with the thought that since Joseph was the heir apparent to David's throne, and Jesus was therefore the adopted son of Joseph, Jesus then could claim legal right to David's throne. Whereas, in Luke's gospel and genealogy, he provides the real line showing Yeshua to be the physical descendant of David through his human mother, Miriam, or Mary. And by that physical union of mother with son, Yeshua could claim the right to sit on David's throne through the physical descent of Mary, and also through the legal line through Joseph, the heir apparent. But upon closer examination, the exact opposite is found to be true. In other words, Matthew gives his genealogy to show us that Jesus' line was not through Joseph, because there was an individual in that list of ancestors whom God cursed and removed from inheriting the throne of David. Not only him, but his descendants, and that would be Jeconiah. We'll get more into that explanation in a little bit in our lesson. But suffice it to say, the need to understand the reason for two genealogies given in the New Testament is important, because according to Jewish custom, there were two requirements for kingship in the Hebrew nation that is laid down for us in the Jewish scriptures. And these requirements developed sometime immediately after the division of the kingdom of Israel, which division occurred after the death of Solomon. And let me elaborate on this more. One requirement applied to the southern kingdom of Judah. One requirement for kingship applied to the southern kingdom of Judah with its capital in Jerusalem. While the second requirement for Hebrew kingship applies to the northern kingdom of Israel with its capital in Samaria. The first requirement for the throne of Judah was Davidic descendancy. The one claiming to be the king of Judah had to be a physical descendant of David, according to what the Lord promised King David in the covenant he made with him. No exceptions. Hence, no one was allowed to sit on David's throne unless he was a member of the house of David, i.e., a physical descendant of King David. And of course, the enemy didn't sit by so that this could come to fruition and spell his doom, because this Messiah king who would come from the lineage of David would destroy the power of Satan's hold over the world. And so the enemy did not wait for this messianic king to come. He tried to incite certain individuals in the time of Isaiah to formulate a conspiracy to do away with the house of David, as we learn in Isaiah 7, 5, and 6, and to which you can learn further on our ministry website, where I have been doing a series of teachings at the Messianic congregation I oversee on the book of Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 7, you can learn more about that conspiracy in detail there. But anyway, there was this conspiracy that Isaiah tells about in which they were going to do away with the house of David. God warned in Isaiah 8 that any such conspiracy was doomed to failure, and those seeking to interrupt the royal descent from the house of David, anyone seeking to interrupt that or nullify it, they were going to be under the destructive act of God's judgment. The second requirement for Hebrew kingship was prophetic sanction or divine appointment. This is peculiarly so with kingship of the northern kingdom of Israel. And we learn in 1 Kings and 2 Kings that anyone who attempted to usurp the kingship of the northern kingdom of Israel without prophetic sanction was assassinated and summarily removed. And so, in order to be king over Israel, whether the southern kingdom of Judah, you had to be of a physical descent from David, or if it was to be king over the northern kingdom of Israel with its capital in Samaria, you had to have prophetic sanction. Now, all of this goes back to when Israel was one kingdom under King David. And we learn from 2 Samuel 7 and Psalm 89 that God made a covenant with King David. God made a covenant with King David. And essentially, in that covenant, God told King David that one of his physical descendants would reign on his throne forever. There would be a series of descendants coming from the loins of David who would be the kings of Israel and Judah. And then one of his descendants out of that line would be chosen to reign on David's throne forever. And that, of course, would be the Messiah. So with these two biblical requirements in mind for kingship in Israel, these two requirements are now reflected and emphasized in the two New Testament genealogies of Jesus. And as the great Messianic scholar Dr. Arnold Fruchtenbaum says about this, it's quite relevant. He says, with the background of these two biblical requirements, the ones that I just expounded on for you, with these two biblical requirements for kingship and what is stated in the New Testament genealogies, the question of Jesus' right to the throne of David can be explained and resolved. So let's look in more detail. In Matthew's genealogy, the gospel writer breaks with Jewish custom and tradition. He does this by the fact that he mentions, and we alluded to this in the last lesson, Matthew mentions the names of four women in the genealogy of Jesus the Messiah. The four women were Tamar, Rahab, Ruth, and Bathsheba. And each one of them had a stigma attached to their names. Now, the mention of these four women stands out in this Jewish genealogy because it was contrary to Jewish practice of that time to name women in a genealogy. And the rabbis still follow this procedure, which is based upon the Talmud. For the Talmud states, quote, a mother's family is not to be called a family, unquote. And even the few women Luke does mention were not the most prominent women in the genealogy of Yeshua. However, Matthew does have reasons for mentioning these four and no others. What do all these women have in common that are mentioned in Messiah's genealogy in the Gospel of Matthew? Well, first, they were Gentiles. This is obvious with Tamar, Rahab, and Ruth. It was probably true of Bathsheba, since it is proposed that her first husband, Uriah, was a Hittite. And it's interesting also to note that the Hittites and the Moabites were to be under the ban of God's destruction. And yet Ruth was a Moabitess, and in all likelihood Bathsheba was a Hittite. And so Matthew's mention of these four ladies of disreputable character makes clear that Jesus came to save not only the lost sheep of the house of Israel, but also the Goyim, the Gentiles. They too would experience salvation at His first coming. Secondly, three of these women were guilty of, actually, three of the four women were guilty of sexual sin. We mentioned this last time. Bathsheba was guilty of adultery with David. Rahab was guilty of prostitution. And Tamar was guilty of incest. And this shows us at once that God's grace can take the individual who comes from a notorious and morally dubious background, and through the person of Messiah, such a background can be erased and a new beginning, one of nobility and uprightness, can be found in the Messiah. This is what we have illustrated here with the mention of these four women. Matthew's genealogy also, furthermore, breaks with tradition in that he skips over names. So this genealogy is not a strict genealogy mentioning every single descendant leading up to Yeshua, Jesus. Now, some in their ignorance, particularly those of a liberal school of thought in the church and more prominently in our secular universities, when you take a New Testament survey course from them, they will point out that these names that are not mentioned in Matthew's genealogy argue for their historical inaccuracy when they compare them with other genealogies given in the Scriptures. Well, they don't realize that Matthew intentionally skipped over certain names so that he could have three groups of 14 in his genealogical accounting of Messiah. And we'll get into why Matthew groups these into three groups, I believe it is, three groups of 14 later on. But anyway, Matthew traces the line of Joseph, Jesus' adopted or foster father, by going back into history and working toward his own time. The gospel writer starts tracing the line with Abraham in verse 2 of Matthew chapter 1. He continues to David in verse 6. And out of David's multiple sons, Solomon is chosen. He is chosen. And the line is then traced from Solomon to King Jeconiah, the one whom God cursed and said, your descendants, none of your descendants, will sit on the throne of David. So now we have a problem. Jesus' adopted father, though he is a descendant of David, he is also a descendant of Jeconiah. And the ban and curse on Jeconiah was still in effect in first century Israel when Jesus was raised by Joseph, a descendant of David. Because in verse 16, we are told that the line of Jeconiah is traced directly through Joseph. He was a direct descendant of David through Solomon, but also through Jeconiah. Now, the Jeconiah link mentioned here in Matthew's Gospel is important because of the special curse pronounced on Jeconiah and his descendants for this apostate king's great wickedness. For we read, God prophesied this through Jeremiah the prophet in Jeremiah 22, 24 through 30, and I will read it. God says here, as I live, declares the Lord, even though Jeconiah, the son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, were a signet ring on my right hand, yet I would pull you off. Is this man Jeconiah a despised, shattered jar? Or is he an undesirable vessel? Why have he and his descendants been hurled out and cast into a land that they had not known? O land, 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 hear the word of the Lord. Thus says the Lord, write this man, Jeconiah, down childless. Write him down childless. A man who will not prosper in his days. For no man of his descendants will prosper sitting on the throne of David or ruling again in Judah. So a very solemn pronouncement of judgment is prophetically declared on the house of Jeconiah, stating in effect that none of his descendants would ever rule on the throne of David. God is saying no descendant of Jeconiah, no descendant of Jeconiah would have the right to the throne of David. Up until the time of Jeremiah, remember, the first requirement for Davidic kingship or messianic lineage was the person had to be descendant from the house of David. But with this prophecy given by Jeremiah, the Lord is limiting this still further. Now one had to be not only of the house of David, but he could not come through the lineage of Jeconiah. And so going back to Matthew's genealogy, we see that Joseph had or came from the bloodline of Jeconiah. Therefore, Joseph was not qualified to sit on David's throne according to the ban placed on Jeconiah and his descendants in Jeremiah 22. So Joseph then could not be the heir apparent to the Davidic throne. This would also entail that no real son of Joseph would have the right to claim the throne of David because of the curse pronounced on Jeconiah and his descendants. And Joseph was a descendant of Jeconiah. Therefore, and this is important to emphasize and remember, therefore, if Jesus were the real physical son of Joseph, he would have been disqualified from sitting on David's throne. Neither could he claim the right to David's throne by virtue of his adoption by Joseph, since Joseph was not the heir apparent, being disqualified because he was a descendant of Jeconiah. So what then is the purpose of Matthew's genealogy? It is to clearly show why Jesus could not be king if he were really Joseph's son. The purpose was not to show the royal line. Matthew starts his gospel with a genealogy. Then he reminds his readers of the Jeconiah problem. And then proceeds with the account of the virgin birth of Messiah Jesus, which from Matthew's viewpoint is the solution to the Jeconiah problem. So Matthew demonstrates that if Jesus were really Joseph's physical son, he could not claim to sit on David's throne because of the curse pronounced on Jeconiah by the Lord. But since Jesus was not Joseph's son, he was born of the Virgin Mary, and his physical right to the throne would then come through the physical descendants of Mary from King David. Hence, the reason for Luke's genealogy of Messiah. Unlike Matthew, Luke's genealogy follows strict Jewish practice and tradition. This is seen by the fact that Luke omits no names and mentions no women. However, if by Jewish custom one could not mention the name of a woman but wished to trace her line, they would do so in Jewish genealogies. They would do so by using the name of the woman's husband. That raises another question, again, as Dr. Arnold Fruchtenbaum tells us in his study of the Messiah's two genealogies in the Gospels. And that question is this. He states, if someone studied a genealogy, how would he know whether the genealogy were that of the husband or that of the wife? Since in either case, the husband's name would be used. The answer is not difficult. The problem lies with the English language. Again, I'm borrowing some of these insights from various sources and New Testament scholars. And the genealogy of the Messiah is one of the special studies of the great Messianic scholar Dr. Arnold Fruchtenbaum. He says here that the answer lies with the English language. In English, it is not good grammar to use a definite article before a proper name. For instance, the Matthew, the Luke, the Miriam. However, it is quite permissible and used in New Testament Greek grammar. In the Greek text of Luke's genealogy, you will note that every single name mentioned has the Greek definite article, the, with one exception, the name of Joseph. And so someone reading the original would understand by the missing definite article from Joseph's name that this was not really Joseph's genealogy, but his wife Miriam's, or Mary. Also, many translations of Luke 3:23 read this, being supposedly the son of Joseph, the son of Eli. Now here, we, because of the missing Greek definite article before the name of Joseph, that same verse could be translated as follows. Being the son, as was supposed, of Joseph, the son of Eli. In other words, the final parenthesis could be Luke's way of expanding this so that the verse reads that although Yeshua was supposed or assumed to be the descendant of Joseph, he was really the descendant of Heli. And Heli was the father of Miriam. And so Luke is again showing us that this lineage is through the Jesus's lineage is traced here from the physical descendants of his mother, Mary. In this way, we see that Luke begins his genealogy with his own time, and then goes back into history all the way to Adam. When it comes to the family of David in verses 31 and 32, then we see the son of David involved in this genealogy is not Solomon like it was in Matthew's genealogy, but Messiah Jesus' genealogy is traced through Nathan in Luke's genealogy. And so, like Joseph, Miriam was a member of the house of David. Miriam meaning the Hebrew name for Mary, Jesus' human mother. But unlike Joseph, Mary came from David's son Nathan, not Solomon. Mary was a member of the house of David, apart from Jeconiah then. Since Jesus was Miriam's physical son, he too was a member of the house of David, apart from Jeconiah. Hopefully you're following me on this. In this way, Jesus fulfilled the biblical requirement for physical kingship as a descendant of David, according to the Davidic covenant and the criteria God spelled out there in Psalm 89 and 2 Samuel 7. It also must be pointed out that Jesus was not the only member of the house of David apart from Jeconiah. There were a number of other descendants who could claim equality with Jesus to the throne of David, for they too did not have Jeconiah's blood running in their veins. Why Jesus then and not the others? At this point, the second biblical requirement for kingship, that of divine appointment, comes into play here. Of all the members of the house of David, apart from Jeconiah, only one received divine appointment, and that would be the son of Miriam. In Luke 1, 30-33, we read of this divine appointment. And the angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God, and behold, you will conceive in your womb and bear a son, and you shall call his name Yeshua. He will be great, and he will be called the Son of the Most High, and the Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and his kingdom will have no end." So you see now then that the genealogies of Messiah Jesus given in Matthew and Luke do show us that he does fulfill the two requirements for kingship as required in the Jewish scriptures. Thus, proving from many of the proofs that Jesus is the Messiah of Israel. Well, I see my time has slipped away again. Please listen for the announcer at the end of this program so that you can learn more about our ministry of teaching the Jewish nature of the Christian faith to the Gentile church and introducing the Jewish Jesus back to the people of Israel. God bless you. Until next time, Shalom, Yeshua HaMashiach Alechem. May the peace of Jesus the Messiah be with you.